Meanwhile, he watched the turn, expecting the 10 elves to come around any moment and finish them off, but the elves appeared to be hesitating. They must be worried about a trap. "Get it ready!" Dazzle yelled loudly enough for the elves to hear over the nearly deafening clicking of the fee beetles. Hopefully it would delay them longer.
"What?"
Beatrix asked.
"Tricking the elves. You must overpower them. The beetles are our only hope."
"It's not psyche."
She smacked away a beetle latching itself to her neck.
"It's natural aggression. I don't know why it's too strong to alter."
"The queen,"
Dazzle realized. He took Beatrix by the hand and pulled her toward Kernich. Dazzle kept bastial energy floating in front of him for light, revealing piles of beetles as high as his ankles in their way. They stuck to his pants as he kicked through them. They crawled up underneath his shirt and onto his bare stomach as he neared Kernich, who was chopping away a thick section of the apple vine.
"Find the queen,"
Dazzle instructed.
"The elves,"
Kernich said as he looked back.
"Get down!"
"Bastial hell,"
Dazzle muttered as he ducked into the swarm of beetles. He was almost thankful for the fireball that exploded against the wall right behind him, for although the heat stung the back of his neck, it also blew away all the beetles crawling across his shoulders. He saw the queen fee beetle tumble across the backs of her many kin that made up the black, moving ground.
"There!"
Dazzle pointed at the ugly little beast. Its long body gyrated as it righted itself from a twist, its little legs picking itself up. It reared its arrow-shaped head and let out a surprisingly loud hiss in Dazzle's direction. The other beetles charged him.
"Make it think we're allies, Beatrix,"
he suggested. She reached out in the queen's direction. Nothing changed. The beetles squeaked and crawled all over Dazzle, biting him everywhere. He and Beatrix flinched as Kernich jumped in front of them.
"No!"
Dazzle yelled as he realized he'd heard an arrow bury itself in Kernich's flesh. But then Kernich threw a heap of apple vines at the incoming elves, an arrow sticking out of the plant. Kernich nearly collapsed onto the sea of beetles, pale as a ghost from the apple. Dazzle trembled from the sudden weakness, losing his concentration. The light went out. He expected a barrage of arrows and fireballs, the culmination of his pitifully improvised plan. He and his comrades would die here. Hopefully it would be quick, for the bites of these fee beetles were... Wait, what? They had stopped biting him. They dropped from his body. Their entire army, tiny yet fierce, squeaked as it marched toward the elves. They started calling to each other in their language. With the apple far enough away, Dazzle could concentrate enough to make light again. He finally got a good glimpse of his 10 attackers. At first, they seemed to be wearing black, but it was only beetles. They screamed as they started to retreat, the fee beetles chasing them around the heap of apple vines on the ground. The queen remained beside Beatrix, her pointed beetle head aimed in the same direction as all her little minions. Dazzle ran beside the wall to keep from crushing his new allies. He circled inward to pick up the apple vine. It was thicker than any rope, heavy and awkward as it dangled and jiggled. He lost his breath as if he'd jumped into freezing water and could only gasp and wheeze. The elves wouldn't stop shouting at each other, but they did stop running. They turned, with fee beetles covering their bodies, and looked as if they would come back to finish Dazzle off. A few of them lifted their hands, and Dazzle was struck with intense pain that made him lose control of his muscles. He fell on top of the apple. The rubbery plant bounced out, but it was still close to his head. He felt as if he would die from it in only a few moments, as all his energy drained. A massive pair of boots stopped in front of him. Strong arms bent down to gather the apple vine. Kernich grunted as he threw it at the yelping elves. It landed in front of their feet and looped around their ankles. Half of them fell right there, the other half stumbling. When the spell of pain ended, Dazzle tried to get to his feet quickly, but he fell halfway up. Kernich grabbed him beneath his arms and hoisted him the rest of the way. Beatrix passed by, the queen right behind her. Every fee beetle in this cave chased after the elves. Dazzle stumbled along with Kernich's help, but the warrior started to lose his footing as they came close to the apple. Beatrix put herself between them and took hold of Kernich's arm with one hand, Dazzle's arm with the other. She heaved out a groan as she kept them up. Soon they were past the apple and their strength returned. They ran to keep up behind the elves, a sea of beetles between them and Beatrix, with the queen at her side. Dazzle then realized something terrible.
"We have to kill them, or they will come back for us."
He took out his dagger and picked up speed. Kernich matched his stride.
"You're finally thinking as you should."
The elves had clearly given up on the fight, running as fast as they could as they yelped in pain, covered in beetles. Dazzle and Kernich kept up, but Beatrix started to lag behind. They chased the elves out of the cavern. One of them made light as they crossed into the field of bones. The cold blasted Dezzel as he left the cavern, almost chilling the aggression out of him. But he would have to kill these elves. He had to. He gritted his teeth and kept going. It wasn't long before everyone was slipping and falling across the ice and the bones. A few elves took some hard tumbles, beetles and skulls splashing out. Dezzel wanted to slow to avoid falling as well, but he had to catch up. He looked over his shoulder. Beatrix was too far. Kernich had slowed for her. Dezzel looked back at the elves as he became unsure what to do. Something spurred him onward. There was a sudden flash of light, forcing Dezzel to flinch as he expected a fireball. Instead, a portal opened.
No, Basin, do not rescue them!
But wait, how could Basin know they needed to be rescued at this very moment? Dezzel had felt the portal open in the other plane, just as he had before, but he hadn't sensed any communication. Dezzel watched, stunned, as every elf jumped into the portal but one. The mage looked back. It was too dark to see his face before he, too, jumped. As soon as he entered the portal, it shrank into nothing. Dezzel felt chills down his back.
Another portal mage. Basin isn't the only one.
That meant these elves could return at any moment. He turned and ran back to his comrades.
There's another portal mage!
We saw,
Kernich interrupted.
We have to get the Akerol and go before they return.
And the apple,
Dezzel urged.
We leave it,
Kernich replied in anger.
You saw what it did to us. We can't carry it and all of the Akerol.
Kernich was right. They couldn't carry everything they needed to take. Dezzel contemplated leaving a few bags of Akerol here, hidden behind the walls of the cave, to be retrieved later, but they would never be able to return without Basin. And they might never see him again. Dezzel stopped right there, unable to move as dread overcame him. Basin and Lyda could be imprisoned in Meriyuk for the rest of their lives.
Be strong, Dezzel reminded himself. You will figure out something.
They hurried back to the cave, no one offering a plan other than getting the Akerol and leaving.
How long can you control the Queen?
Kernich asked Beatrix.
Indefinitely. She has an insect's mind. Any change I make to it could last hours, years, or even be permanent. I'm doing nothing right now. And look, she gestured at the beetles swarming around them. They are still our allies.
Make sure they stay that way until we get out of here,
Kernich said. Returning to the cave, Dezzel softened the walls so the three of them could work to remove the rock in their way. After some time, they had all six bags of Akerol at their feet. The sun had risen, the exit of the cave glowing.
The elves might already be back, waiting for us,
Kernich said.
A whole army could be out there.
Let me try one thing with the apple before we leave, Dezzel said.
Kernich looked at him as if he was mad.
I will be quick.
Do not try to carry it,
he called after Dezzel.
I'm not stupid.
He hurried to where the severed vine lay, held his breath as if it might help, and knelt and sliced his dagger across the vine several times until he'd cut through it. He reached his trembling hand down to grab one end and turned it up toward his eye to see better. It was a meaty plant, solid black, but Dezzel didn't give up just yet. He carved his dagger down the edge until he gathered many little pieces of it in his hand. Gasping, he stepped away from the vine. He groaned as he kept his hand away from his body to keep from falling.
Dezzel, hurry up!
Kernich yelled.
They aren't here yet, but they could be at any moment.
It took a few shallow breaths for Dezzel's strength to return, but he made light when it did, and smiled at what he saw. Amidst the chunks of black were many little seeds of the same color, shaped like melon seeds. He flicked away the chunks of apple and pocketed the seeds. Chapter 11 Although Lyda was tempted by the seemingly endless number of books at her disposal, it was only her father who read during their plentiful leisure time. Lyda, meanwhile, entered the other plane. She had no hope of reaching Dezzel. He was too far, and Fatol would stop her even if Dezzel wasn't. She spent her time exploring, instead, for it seemed to be an entirely new world. It wasn't until her second day as a captive in the Elven Territory that she realized that it wasn't a new world at all. It was their same world, yet a different side of it. Fatol had shown great power in this plane, taking hold of Lyda while she slept and preventing her from waking. He'd filled her mind with fear while questioning her about Akerol. There was no need for this anymore now that she'd been captured. He let her explore the plane without interference. Perhaps he was too busy to notice or care, or he assumed she had little to no power in this plane. But he was wrong about that. The plane was composed of energy that Lyda knew to be Bastial, though she couldn't feel it in the same way she could feel Bastial in the physical realm. She'd always floated above the land until recently, when Fatal had thrown her into it, and she realized it wasn't physical. It was dense clouds of bright energy. Amidst the energy, her senses tingled. She felt like she was witnessing a grand and beautiful place every time she entered, the way the right setting of mountains, water, and sky could set her heart afloat. But it happened every time, over and over. Even as she tired physically from trying to explore with her mind, the feeling returned whenever she entered this other realm. Her father's body was comprised of energy here that was every hue of blue she'd ever witnessed, with some shades she wasn't sure she'd seen before. His energy told her things, but she understood none of what it said. She went between the realms, asking her father his thoughts and feelings, then watched how his energy shifted in shape, vibrated, or even changed color to purple or brown. She wanted to understand what all of it meant, for it did seem to relate to his state of mind in the physical realm. But it was all too new for her to figure out anything. She could feel herself getting stronger, but with what exactly, she couldn't be sure. Fatal had left her and her father here alone and sent his 10 elves into the cave in Goldrum. Lyda had entered the other realm in a desperate attempt to reach Dezel. She hoped she'd gotten strong enough to find him, but her effort proved futile. She did feel something else, though. The energy, when it was still, was eerie, like the way a whole town might stop and listen if they heard the footsteps of a giant. Lyda could sense something in this other realm, though not a giant. It had far more power. A portal tore open close enough for Lyda to run to in a few moments, had the door to this place not been locked. All the energy in the realm jittered, whooshing toward the portal as if to be sucked away. Lyda watched her own energy stretch toward the black portal, the only thing dark in this entire place, and felt a sudden tension, but she couldn't tell whether it was in this realm or the other. She focused her mind on the portal, breaking through the bright clouds to get a clear view of the 10 spirit-like shapes of various colors disappearing into the black hole one at a time. She felt a connection to the last one before it drifted into the portal. This was the portal mage. His energy was of a different texture, fuzzy. It blurred the yellow and red clouds around it until it disappeared. She didn't know how she knew him to be a male elf. More than with the other spirits, it seemed as if she could reach out with her mind to take hold of him. She didn't know what would happen then, but the option was clearly there. She returned to the physical realm and told her father, "I felt the portal open."
"You did?"
He stopped his pacing. This was the only time he hadn't been reading a book, his latest choice, a retelling of the history of elves in both Merryik and Meritar, their native home in the other continent, Greenedge.
"Yes," she said. "I figured out how Fatal can stop you from opening a portal, but I don't know how to do it myself."
"Oh, it would have been nice to give them more time."
He tried to smile forgivingly, but it just brought out the sadness in his eyes even more.
"Perhaps the three of them will think of a way out of this."
"I believe they can," Lyda said, and was surprised to realize she really felt this way.
Her father nodded without enthusiasm. He took this time to ask her more about the other realm, but Lyda wasn't able to answer his general questions with anything specific. She came to realize that her experience wasn't much more than colors and feelings.
"It sounds similar to the spiritual world," her father noted. "It's been a while, but do you remember what I've told you about it?"
"Yes, everything. As a girl, I made you tell me everything you knew about it countless times until none of it sounded new." He chuckled.
"With how much you were asking, I worried I was going to have to make up other details to keep us both entertained. I'm glad I didn't. There are some similarities between the two. The bright colors, the bastial energy, the clouds. But one is home to the dead, and the other to the living. I'm glad you have access to the living. They're much more use to us right now."
"Well, I'm not sure about that. I can't do anything."
"Yet," her father said. "Even if the elves get the Akaral, we will find some way to get it back."
She furrowed her brow.
"I hope you don't intend to start a battle with the elves, and I don't see any other way of getting it."
"We just need enough power to take it without a battle. We can use the Warring Kings."
He stroked his chin as his gaze left Lyda to fall to the floor.
"We might be able to unite Kiro and Tenred after all, if the elves get the Akaral."
He frowned.
"But Fathal won't give up the Akaral under threats alone. Perhaps you're right. There might not be another way."
She couldn't tell if her father was condoning battle or resigned to allowing the elves to have the Akaral. She'd never met anyone more determined than her father, but ever since his trip to Caenuan in search of something that would stop the war, she worried that this determination would lead to his death.
"I should make better use of my time than reading about elves,"
Basin said as he walked to the nearest of the many tall bookshelves.
"If Fatal gets the Ackerel, he will free us, but we won't be able to return to Kiro. We'll find some way of fetching your mother from the Academy without being captured by Alphon Estlander's army, and then we'll go to Goldrum in a portal."
"What about Dezel, Beatrix, and Kernich?"
"None of them can return to Kiro, unfortunately, so I imagine they'll want to go with us."
"What will we do in Goldrum?" He stopped his browsing to glance at her from the sides of his eyes.
"Not give up, if that's what you're implying."
She thought for a moment as he waited for her response. "All right, Father," she said. "I trust you no matter what happens." She wasn't ready to abandon Kiro, but she didn't have to yet. She wanted to support her father for now, as he seemed to be in a panic, rushing as he scanned the titles on the book spines in front of him. After a little while, she started to wonder something. Why had Fathol only sent 10 elves? 10 would be enough to kill Dezel, Beatrix, and Kernich, but Fathol had never seemed to stop at enough before. Why not send 100, just to be sure? With 10, Lyda's allies might take their chances in a fight. Against 100, they wouldn't.
My bastial stars, he wants them to fight. But why?
Father, why didn't Fathol send 100 elves? He stopped scanning the books and went still.
God's mercy.
Lyda cursed herself for not thinking of this sooner.
We have to do something.
They both looked toward the locked door. Basin turned around and ran toward their sleeping quarters.
Follow me. I need your help.
He threw his sheets off his mattress and started to lift one end of it. Lyda took the other. They carried it out and set it on the floor in front of the locked door. Basin backed up.
Let me handle whoever guards the door. We will not kill any of them, no matter what.
Agreed.
Basin sprinted and jumped. He kicked the door with both feet and landed on the mattress. There was a crack as his boots struck the wood, but the door didn't budge. He rolled off the mattress as Lyda mimicked her father, kicking the door and landing on the mattress. Pain reverberated through her ankles and knees. She rolled off as her father came soaring over her. An elf was just starting to yell something as Basin kicked the door the second time, breaking the lock so that it swung open. He and Lyda ran through to find one shocked elf.
"Get back inside!"
he ordered. Basin ran for the elf instead. The elf lifted his hand and made a face of concentration, but Basin must have resisted the spell completely. Nothing changed as he flew at the elf and took him down. He got behind the elf on the ground and wrapped his arm around his neck, grabbing his forearm with his other hand to keep the headlock strong. The elf squirmed and tried to make a sound, but he couldn't. Lyda scouted for others as her father seemed to have this elf under control. The building that was their prison seemed to be empty except for this one guard. Fathol probably knew that even if they escaped this building, they wouldn't escape the village without being seen. Fortunately, leaving wasn't their intention at this moment. Eventually, the elf went limp. Basin quickly released his hold. He took Lyda's hand as the two of them ran out into the village. She was thankful for the dark, for Lyda couldn't make anything out besides the silhouettes of a few elves in the distance. Basin stopped and cursed.
I'm mixed up. Do you remember which way from here?
Yes, from the portal, I felt.
She took the lead. It was open grass ahead, with neighboring homes built in lines around the meadow. The only thing in their way was a large farm sectioned off by fences.
I've got it from here,
Basin said, taking the lead after they detoured around the farm.
They've already taken the portal, Lyda told her father. So what's the plan?
We have to hope there's Ackerel near the portal location.
It seemed unlikely to Lyda, but what else could they do? Go back to the prison and wait for their allies to die? There were only a few elves out at this time of the night, making it easy for Lyda and her father to return to what she assumed to be the center of the village, where they'd arrived via portal. They stopped in the open field and got down on their stomachs. No one would be able to see them unless they were close. There appeared to be a few elves standing around the portal location. Lyda assumed one to be Fathol.
If there was Ackerel, she whispered, it would be glowing.
One of them probably has some in his pocket wrapped in cloth, her father replied. I bet it's Fathol.
He's already proven you can't resist his psyche like you did with the other elf. You can't hope to wrestle it from him, and I'm not going to accomplish anything good by shooting someone with a fireball.
You're right. So all we can do is wait.
Lyda looked around. She wished there was a better hiding spot, but if they moved close to any of the buildings that contained a psychic, they could be sensed. So they waited. Eventually, Lyda asked, "How long will someone stay passed out when you choke them like that?"
"A minute at most. Probably less. We'll have to act soon if the elf comes here first."
There was a whoosh of air as the portal opened near the elves. Lyda had felt no anticipation this time from the partial focus she put in the other plane, probably because the portal had been opened too far from her. This was only the exit. She and her father watched silhouettes tumble out. It was too dark for her to separate the shadows enough to count them or to tell if any were humans. Soon the portal closed. She made out Fatal's elvish words. He was clearly angry. A wonderful sound.
"They fought them back," Lyda whispered.
"It does seem that way."
She was beaming. However, then she heard Fathol order these elves to do something. She thought she saw him lifting his arm to point. Was there more light now? Yes, Fathol had taken out an Acheral stone, now uncovering it. The white glow put 13 elves in view. Lyda felt a spark deep in her mind. She put herself in the other plane and fell into the same sensation of eerie stillness as before. Another portal was about to be opened. They were going back, Fathol as well, to ensure her allies were killed.
"It's going to be too late,"
Basin said as he jumped up and broke into a sprint. Lyda felt as though she could reach out with her mind and touch this portal mage in front of her. She split apart the clouds in her way and seized his energy cluster, caging him in a weak embrace. Fortunately, he seemed powerless to break out. She didn't even feel him struggle. She noticed indistinct sounds of elvish in the physical realm, able to hear shock among them, but nothing more than that. It became increasingly more difficult to hold on to this portal mage's energy as the colors in this realm started to blur together. She had trouble focusing, numb as if she was falling asleep. An acute notion of fear pricked her, waking her up. Fathol's vibrant spirit, a multitude of bright colors, appeared beside her.
"Release him,"
he demanded. Fathol didn't need to issue a threat as an unseen force opened its jaws and swallowed Lyda. She rolled back into the physical realm, aching for breath and rest. She picked herself up from the grass to see her father reaching the elves, where he flicked his hand and forced the energy out of Fathol's Acheral bracelet. Basin wasn't done. He lifted both hands. Four beams of silvery light shot into the night sky. Small pieces of wool fell onto the grass, two of them aflame. Basin stomped out the fires as Fathol screamed something in elvish, ignoring Basin to point somewhere away from everyone. Half the elves ran off, one of them shouting what sounded to be orders. Lyda assumed they were fetching more Acheral. Another elf came running from behind Lyda, shouting loudly. She understood Fatal's name, but nothing else. One of the elves made light in his direction, inadvertently revealing Lyda on the ground. She stood. She'd been ready to give herself up anyway, as they had her father on his knees in front of Fathol now. The elf who Basin had put in a short slumber pushed down on Lyda's shoulders.
"On your knees," he ordered. "Don't resist."
She wouldn't. She tried not to indulge in her joy as Fathol paced around in front of Basin, shooting looks over his shoulder at the elves running off for more Acheral.
"I made sure you and your daughter were comfortable,"
Fathol said without looking at either of them. "You were treated with more luxury and respect than anyone, even a human, would receive in one of your prisons, and still you might have just ruined this." Fathol finally stared at Basin, crouching down to meet his eyes.
"You shouldn't feel so satisfied, headmaster. Now I will have to punish you to make sure you don't misbehave again when I get back."
Something took hold of Lyda's mind and seemed to pull it out of her body. She appeared in the other realm, unable to move or see anything but black.
"And you, Lyda, will suffer most of all."
He tossed her out of the realm. Shivers ran down her spine. She ignored her fear as she yelled out to him,
"We would have continued to cooperate if you had been half as merciful as you pretend to be. We figured out you told your elves to kill our allies. That's why we came out here. You knew there was a good chance they would fight back and die if you only sent 10 elves. That's why you only sent 10 instead of 50. Then there would be no war, and they would be dead. It's what you want."
"You don't understand me or my elves, so you shouldn't try."
"I do understand that you want our allies dead. The only thing I don't understand is why. What does it matter to you if you kill 3 of us but get the Acheral? Do you expect us to come back and take it from you? You're more confident, or should I say arrogant, than that."
"No, I'm not afraid of that."
A team of elves approached.
"Finally,
Patol said, then transitioned into Elvish. He spoke for a while as they took Basin by his arms and escorted him toward Lyda. Two others grabbed Lyda to take her and her father back toward their prison. At least she hoped it would be the same prison as before. She didn't want to admit it, but she had gotten used to the comfort of that place. A real prison cell wouldn't compare, especially given that she and her father might have just allowed Dazzle and the others to escape with the Ackerel. It could be weeks, months, or maybe never that they were captured and brought here.
"It's Dazzle, isn't it?"
Basin shouted back to Fatal.
"It's him you want to kill? The others could live so long as he doesn't. You really did see something in him before the battle, and you are scared of it. Not as scared as you should be after what you've done."
Lyda gulped, but the fear she felt wasn't only for herself. She hadn't realized how much danger Dazzle was in until then. If he was such a threat to Fatal because of his potential in the other realm, would she be the same threat one day?
Am I already?
Fortunately, these elves did take her and her father back to the same building as before, but they put them in a different section. It was completely dark here, so Lyda made her own light. They had stuck her and her father in a small room. There were no beds, no bookshelves. There was no furniture at all, in fact. Besides windowless walls and a cold wooden floor, there was a single bucket. This wasn't a room, but a cell. Lyda shuddered, but it had been worth it. She and her father had bought more time for their allies.
"How do you think they did it?"
Lyda asked her father, who stared at the door as if trying to will it open. He turned and showed her a smile.
"I wish I knew. I doubt they killed any of the elves. I think they saw 10 of them come out of that portal. I think there was a trick involved."
"You know that cave. What trick could they have done?"
He chuckled.
"I have no idea. I want to believe it was something with the Fee Beetles, but a group of elven psychics would be able to control them better than Beatrix. Perhaps Dazzle did something with the stone. Do you know if he can make it collapse from the roof of the cave?"
"Maybe. I hope they didn't trap themselves in there. We won't be able to help them again."
"I don't think they did."
He laughed harder.
"Fatal was too angry for them to be trapped."
Lyda was about to laugh with her father, but she remembered Fatal's threat. Pain was in her near future. Her father seemed to sense her worry, taking her hands.
"I'm so sorry for all of this. When that bastard hurts you, I want to kill him."
"I'm all right," she told him. "Really, I can handle whatever he does if it means the others get to stay alive with the Ackerel."
He studied her face for a moment before showing her the same smile she'd seen often during their lessons of bastial energy manipulation.
Chapter 12 The morning sun brought some warmth, but it seemed to be losing the battle against the chill of this place. Dazzle set out from the cave with his two companions, hurried from the fear that the elves would return in a portal any moment. Beatrix kept the army of Fee Beetles with them through her manipulation of the Queen's feeble mind, but she and Kernich still appeared to be weak from their 2 days spent in cells, her without water and him without food. They all carried a heavy Ackerel bag on their back, but that still left 3 bags to be carried between them. The bags had a slight glow from the Ackerel within. Only the bottles with cracks that went all the way through the glass contained Ackerel that had absorbed bastial energy. The bags glowed more after these 2 days than when Dazzle first stuck them behind the walls of the cave. It proved a theory about bastial energy, that it rose up from the center of the world, from the ground, eventually reaching everywhere, including pockets within mountains. Sometimes the energy became trapped in these pockets, and built up over centuries until something broke either part of the mountain or the ground. This would cause a natural explosion. The one Dazzle and his comrades hoped to make was unnatural. The bag was warm against Dazzle's back, bringing him relief from the bone-numbing cold. He carried another bag on top of his arms, for it was too big to get his hands around. Kernich held one with each hand, using the straps. He wouldn't get the same warmth as he would if he'd carried them close, but the freezing cold wasn't the worst concern. The three of them wouldn't get very far before the elves returned without at least one horse to help take the load. They ran over the field of bones the opposite way they'd come, soon passing by the portal location. Beatrix told the Queen to return to her home then, and all her Fee Beetles followed. The icy ground appeared to be too hard for their footprints to show, fortunately, but the elves could still spot them walking from a great distance away. There was nowhere to hide between these 2 mountain ridges, tempting Dazzle to convince his party to climb over the mountain rather than carry these heavy bags a mile, to get around the one to their north. But the bags would turn a difficult climb into an impossible one unless they left three behind. They might have to, if the elves showed up again. Three bags of bottled ackerel was nowhere near the cache Dazzel had witnessed in the Marrow's home in Caenuan, but he and his allies might be able to find more ackerel. It could take months, and the chances were slim, and hundreds or even thousands might die in the war between Kiro and Tenred. No, they had to get the ackerel they had back to Kiro and into the hands of the Wind Knights. No one spoke as they walked along the northern edge of the ravine, a frozen river on the other side. The field of bones eventually came to an end. It was a relief to look down and see sprouts of grass popping up amidst the frost, but it did mean that their footprints could be seen if the elves were to look closely enough. They took a windy path to step on the rocks on the far edge. Walking on them was uncomfortable and slow in comparison to the snowy grass, but it had to be this way to keep their footprints from showing. Dazzel kept some of his focus in the other plane, the urge to go back there never waning. He dove into it as he felt something awry, but before his mind was wholly there, Kernich cursed loudly, bringing Dazzel back to the physical plane.
"Another portal! Find somewhere to hide!"
Dazzel looked over his shoulder. The portal was barely visible from here among the fog, only its black standing out. Dazzel hadn't felt the warning in the other plane, but he could feel the portal open now, even though he wasn't in that plane. It was similar to experiencing something he could almost swear he'd experienced before, in exactly the same way. Then Dazzel felt Fatal enter the plane, his mountainous power dwarfing every cluster of energy. Dazzel fell out of the plane and grabbed his head. He must not let any piece of his mind go back there, or Fatal might get a sense of where Dazzel was. He could almost feel Fatal calling to him, looking for him, but he wasn't sure if he was imagining it. They crouched behind large rocks along the sloping leg of the mountain. They waited there, catching their breath, no one daring to look. Long minutes went by. Dazzel tried to think of a plan. He could climb the mountain if they were caught, but a spell of pain would drop him unless an archer or a mage decided to take his life first. They could stash the ackerel in the mountainside. There just might be enough time. Better yet, they could stash themselves. There would be no way to remake the wall of rock they'd disrupted for it to look natural, but so long as the elves didn't come too close, they wouldn't be able to tell. Dazzel could think of nothing better, so he started scooping out the hard yet loosened chunks of rock.
"We might be able to hide ourselves," he told Beatrix and Kernich.
After a moment of staring at each other, all three of them were working quickly. They made good progress, but Beatrix asked an important question that stopped Dazzel for a moment.
"Could part of the mountain come down on top of us if we make the hole too big?"
"Better make three separate holes." They shifted their positions to put Dazzel between them as he softened the surface of the stone in front of him and on either side. Kernich worked the quickest, but his hole had to be the biggest. When he had dug out enough space, he went over to help Beatrix, who lagged behind. The two of them together finished at the same time as Dazzel. The hard part was still to come. How far away were the elves? There was no way to know without checking.
"Go first, Princess,"
Kernich said, and practically pushed her into her hole. With Beatrix sitting, the gap in the mountainside didn't need to be large. Kernich and Dazzel stuffed two of the ackerel bags in with her, then they closed the hole by pushing the chunky, muddy rock in place at the base of the hole. They evened out the softened rock as they built up the short wall, eventually closing the hole, except for a small slit for air. The stone had hardened as they worked, and now it looked akin to the rest of the rock around it, except that it appeared to have been melted and then dried. Even if the elves noticed, they might not know what it meant. The elves hadn't stopped to investigate the walls of the cave when they'd attacked. Perhaps Lyder and Basin had managed to keep Dazzel's ability secret.
"Now you,"
Kernich said, taking hold of Dazzel with both hands and guiding him into his hole. Dazzel fought against the stone warrior.
"I have to go last, or you won't be able to soften the rock to enclose yourself."
Kernich stopped pushing.
"You're right."
He was always thinking so much of other people that he sometimes left them more vulnerable. Dazzel made a mental note of it. Kernich maneuvered into the largest hole at the end. Dazzel gave him two bags of ackerel to pull in with him, then began shoving mounds of the loose rock into the hole for Kernich to help him from the other side. They quickly built up the wall until it reached the top of the hole. Dazzel poked out a small slit with his dagger.
"Work fast,"
Kernich said with a muffled voice.
"I won't forgive myself if you die."
Before going into his own hole, Dazzel risked a look over the largest rock between him and the portal location. He ducked down after a blink and had to think about what he'd just seen. There were more than 10 elves, possibly 15, They were walking this way in the centre of the ravine, peering in each direction. Dazzle had less time than he needed to finish patching his hole. He took a breath to think of another plan, but he was unable to. He pushed the ackerel into his hole, then shoved all of the loose rock into it as well. He crawled over it, then turned around on his knees. From beneath his legs he pushed out and stacked the loose rock to make the wall from within.
"Come on, come on," he repeated,
as he made up for lost time with incredible haste. Chunks of rock flew into his face as well as out from the hole. It would be even more obvious to the elves that something had been constructed here, if they came close enough to see small piles of what looked like melted rock. Dazzle finished his wall as he heard Fatal's distinctive voice from afar. Dazzle went still, scared to breathe. He hadn't made a hole for air, but he had other matters to worry about. Now, with the difficult task of making and patching holes no longer distracting him, he could feel something foreign in his mind. It spoke to him the same way a song could be stuck in repetition, always there behind his thoughts and ready to jump out and take all his focus. If he let it, he would be pulled into the other plane, where Fathol could figure out exactly where he was. He needed something to distract him and immediately thought of Lyda. He pictured her auburn hair and piercing green eyes. He remembered the feeling of her leaning against his shoulder while no one else was around in Caenuan. He cherished the touch of her hand over his chest when she'd felt his heartbeat in that stolen moment during the night in her father's house at the academy. He smiled as he recalled her asking for help to put on her armour, even though it was clear later that she would have put it on faster without him. He missed Lyda. Her gentle nature made the harsh reality they'd created for themselves a little softer around the edges. There were always moments of peace between the difficulties, and Lyda was able to turn those moments into memories Dazzle treasured more than anything he'd ever owned. It was because they'd shared these moments. He smiled wider, thinking of Lyda remembering them. He hoped they meant the same to her as they did to him. He missed Adria as well. It was impossible not to think of Lyda without thinking of her closest friend. If Adria had been here with Dazzle, Beatrix, and Kernich, everything would have been easier. Fathol would have had to send more than 10 elves after them if the battle mage had been in that cave with them. Wait, why had he only sent 10? Dazzle refrained from gasping. Fathol had wanted his elves to fight. He'd wanted them to kill 2 of the humans and torture the last for information on the Ackerel's whereabouts. He wants me dead. I'm too much of a threat to him. I wish I could figure out why and use it to free Lyda and Basin. At least Dazzle had bought enough time for the elves to pass by. Dazzle was almost in disbelief that this had worked. It seemed impossible to trick Fathol. Dazzle softened the stone and used his dagger to make a small slit. There had been no discussion with Beatrix and Kernich as to how long they should wait before emerging, but they would have to go the same way as the elves to get around the mountain. It seemed prudent to wait at least a few hours. Dazzle sighed. This would be a perfect opportunity to explore the other plane further. But he couldn't with Fathol lurking. Would the elves return to the portal location to go back to Meriuk? If not, where would they think to look? How long would they search this territory? Leading the elves was a demanding job. Dazzle couldn't imagine Fathol out here for more than a day. A day? Did that mean Dazzle and the others had to wait here that whole time? He supposed they could leave these holes and go back the other way, hoping the elves wouldn't turn around. It was a longer trip to get around the mountains that way. No, doing so would take them right by the citadel where they'd slain a king. It was a reminder that there could be many others looking for Dazzle and his party, not just the elves. He had no idea what he should do. Even worse, the urge to relieve his bladder was coming on strong. Oh, bastial hell! It was an understatement to say the day was difficult with Dazzle staying hidden in the rocks. If he could have visited the other plane, he wouldn't have minded his hunger, or his discomfort as much, and the issue of getting rid of his bodily waste would have still been an issue, but not nearly as annoying. He'd watched the elves continue onward, past where he and his comrades were hidden. They hadn't returned until nightfall, when they'd walked back the other way, illuminated by a mage making light. Dazzle hadn't spoken one word to Beatrix or Kernich. He figured they'd wanted to wait for the elves to return, like Dazzle had. He rolled his eyes when he thought of them wanting to wait. What they wanted didn't seem to matter anymore. When was the last time they'd done something because they wanted to? Needed. Now that was the right word. Relieved the elves had finally given up and taken a portal back, Dazzle softened the wall of stone in front of him and pushed his way out. "Kernich? Beatrix?" he called. Dazzle panicked when they didn't respond. Had he given them enough air with just the small slit? He took out the wall between him and Beatrix in chunks. She was lifting her head up and opening her eyes when he caught his first glimpse of her. She gasped in alarm.
"Where are they?"
"They just left in a portal. You were asleep?" She nodded. Dazzle then figured the same of Kernich. He helped Beatrix get the heavy bags of ackerel out of her little cave, then walked over to take down Kernich's wall.
"They left?"
the warrior asked when he was free, then yawned. "They did." Kernich crawled out and unfolded to stand upright. He stretched his arms, then yawned again. Dazzle held his aching back. He was tired, wishing he'd had the same chance to rest. He needed to figure out some way of sleeping without drifting into the other plane, in case Fatal had decided to stay behind. It seemed unlikely, but everything the elves had risked for the Ackerel would have seemed unlikely to Dazzle if it hadn't already happened. He and his two comrades walked around the mountain, weighed down by the six bags. It would be an immense relief to finally get them to the Wind Knights, but Dazzle was starting to have his doubts they ever would. Beatrix sensed nothing for them to eat, but the path to the coast would bring them past the forest, where Dazzle still felt guilt for slaying the beautiful snow leopard. Beatrix wore the pelt while Dazzle and Kernich shivered. It was fortunate it hadn't started to rot. Perhaps it was just too cold. She offered several times to let one of them wear it instead, but Dazzle and Kernich always told her they were fine. She was polite, not to call out their lies, though she did continue to insist until Dazzle eventually took it for a few hours. When his shivers abated, he passed it off to Kernich and was glad when the warrior accepted it without complaint. At sunrise they caught sight of a surprisingly large village, with hundreds of meagre homes. It was less than a mile out of the way, and Dazzle could feel in the sullen silences that his companions were as hungry as he was. They had some coin to spend. They needed food, warmth, but a horse, above all. It was unlikely that anyone here would be willing to part with a horse without an inordinate amount of coin, for trading a horse to the king could get its owner to the other side of the citadel, where better land and weather awaited. In fact, Dazzle could think of no reason that someone here would still have a horse. But to his surprise, there was one home with two horses grazing on the frosted tips of grass, poking out through the snow in their fenced enclosure. It was the closest farm of this large village, sitting a good distance away from the rest, as if standing guard. Kernich had given Beatrix back the leopard-skin coat, but Dazzle suggested the psychic return it to the warrior. Kernich looked the most intimidating out of the three of them, in their battered leather armor. Best to cover it up. She agreed. Beatrix knocked on the door, Dazzle and Kernich waiting behind her. Dazzle looked over and noticed a glower on Kernich's face.
"Try to smile," Dazzle whispered.
The warrior put on a big false grin as a woman answered the door. She looked to be between Dazzle and Beatrix in age, perhaps in her early 20s. She didn't seem to be embarrassed, answering the door while brushing her tangled brown hair. She let go of the door with her other hand to rub an eye.
"You're early. I'm—"
She stopped as she looked up.
"Who are you?"
She didn't appear to be at all afraid, focusing more on getting out the tangles in her hair. But then she glanced toward Kernich with his silly smile and froze.
"Oh, you hawkers. I have no money. I doubt anyone here will be interested in what you're selling. They're all trying to relocate." "No, I'm Beatrix Estlander," she said. "We're—"
Before the princess could get out another word, a familiar voice called from inside.
"Beatrix? Anna?" "Good, you two know each other,"
said the woman at the door. "I need to finish getting ready." Anna appeared in her place. She formed a smile.
"Beatrix, I'm glad you finally took my advice." "I didn't. What are you doing here? You didn't come here for me?" "No, what is this place?" "I'm confused. How could you come here without knowing where you were going?"
Dazzle remembered who Anna was now. She'd arrived at his tavern shortly after the skirmish, when Jimin had almost tricked Beatrix and Kernich into stepping into a trap. Dazzle had a fight beside his mother against Erwal and Micklin. Gergis had still been alive then and had nearly killed Dazzle with his sword. Remembering that detail made Dazzle feel slightly better about killing Gergis later, to escape from the prison of Kiro Castle, though the fact that he had taken a life—lives— still turned his stomach. Anna had fled Kiro because she thought Jimin would come after her. She'd told Beatrix that Jimin could lie to psychics. She'd wanted Beatrix to leave with her, inviting Dazzle and Kernich to come as well.
"You were wrong about my brother," Beatrix snapped. "It wasn't him alone who killed my father. Jimin was more responsible.
He tricked my brother, made Alaphon believe the poison would only sicken my father, not kill him.
Anna stared blankly.
I would say I'm sorry, but I told you what I thought I knew. I was trying to help. I still don't understand why you're here. It's clearly not to tell me I was wrong.
Beatrix let out her breath.
I apologize. The last few days have been difficult. No, the last few weeks have been difficult.
Months, Bezel told himself.
Didn't you say you would stay with Sonya Greyheart in her mansion?
Beatrix asked. Dazzle heard the other woman laughing deeper within the house.
This is the mansion, she shouted. My mother likes to make that joke.
Anna frowned at Beatrix.
I didn't think it was very funny. You're Sonya's daughter?
Beatrix called to the other woman.
Yes, I'm Keel Greyheart. Come in and stand by the fire if you want.
Dazzle almost bumped into Beatrix in his hurry to follow her inside. He let out a sigh of satisfaction from the warmth when Kernich closed the door after them. The three of them rushed through the room, Dazzle noticing no details, to squat in front of the hearth. They held out their hands as they shivered. Kernich took off the leopard-skin coat and put it around Beatrix's shoulders.
Thank you.
Anna came up behind them.
So, it's a coincidence you're here?
Not quite, Dazzle took it upon himself to answer, for it seemed that the two psychics might want to discuss other matters.
We saw horses.
Keel, who'd come back into the front room, cut him off.
We need both, sorry. They mate and make other horses. The people here need them more than anything you can need in Kiro.
She walked over to stand at the side of the hearth.
I am sorry, she said again in a lighter tone. Unfortunately, I have to be stern, or people will take until I have nothing to give others.
You help them? Dazzle asked.
My mother and I try our best. We've been all over Greenedge, helping as many people as we can. We've only been here since the winter started. I wish we'd come earlier. We could have done more if we'd arrived before the weather turned. How much do you three know about this land?
We're in northern Goldrum, right?
Dazzle guessed.
Right. King Carolto's territory. The Takaris let him have it, for there is not much wealth to be taxed anyway.
It's not his territory any longer,
Kernich grumbled. He held his hands so close to the fire it was a surprise they didn't burn.
He's dead now,
Anna gasped.
Is that why you came?
No. Ridding this place of his rule was just a perquisite to our visit. The headmaster sent us here in a portal without telling us where we were going or what he intended for us to do here. We don't have time to discuss that. A few hundred elves were in the process of killing our allies.
Now elves are involved?
Anna's voice rose until it squeaked. I'm sure they've always been watching and waiting, Dazzle commented. They don't care about the war, they just want Akaral.
So that's what you've got in your bags?
Keel said.
Barely escaped with it, Beatrix told her. Is your mother nearby?
I don't know where she is now. She gets involved with the locals and doesn't usually come back until night, sometimes the next day.
There was a knock at the door.
And that means I must be leaving. I'm to help a group of the locals hunt in the forest.
Keel started toward the door.
Wait,
Dazzle said as he was starting to realize something. Keel and her mother were clearly the most powerful people in this town. Dazzle had felt a portal open. Somewhere in this vicinity, it had to be one of the two of them.
I can't wait, she walked past Dazzle. My help is needed. We just need a portal.
Keel stopped and looked over her shoulder. The knocking continued. A voice called out for her. The way Keel stared at Dazzle, as if considering silencing him permanently, was making him want to reach for his dagger. Without a word, she turned and went to answer the door.
Something important came up, she told her hunting group. Give me 1 hour.
A man's voice sounded surprisingly understanding as he said,
All right, we'll come back.
Keel stormed back to Dazzle, who stood so he felt less vulnerable.
Who told you?
Keel whispered through her teeth.
No one. Anna, is he honest?
Keel questioned.
He's telling the truth. Then how can you possibly know?
Keel asked Dazzle. I felt a portal open last night somewhere around here.
You seem powerful. Common sense told me it was either you or your mother.
You felt the portal? Were you hiding under my bed?
No.
Then how did you possibly feel the portal?
It affects the world strongly in another plane. I can feel portals from miles away, it seems.
It seems.
I'm still rather new at visiting this other plane.
You mean the spiritual world, where the dead live?
No, only the living are in this plane.
Her brow furrowed. She turned and started to pace as she spoke to herself too quietly for Dazzle to hear.
What's the spiritual world?
He asked.
It's the only other plane I've visited. I didn't know there was a third.
Keel wore a little smile as she approached Ezel again.
Tell me everything you know about this other plane.
Wait, Beatrix said. So you can make a portal?
I have the gift, but I'm still training. I don't have the same mastery over it as Base and Hiller.
Can you make a portal to Kiro? Beatrix asked.
Aye, to a few places in Kiro.
Ezel didn't know who jumped in celebration first, him, Beatrix, or Kernich. But soon the three of them were grabbing each other and hopping up and down.
Chapter 13 Keel warned them.
I haven't opened a portal to anywhere in Ovira in years. I'm not sure if I'll be able to open one big enough for you to fit through.
We can wait if you need to practice, Ezel said. We have plenty of Akaril. Which locations in Kiro are available to you?
I've established exits in Raywhite Forest, the Academy, and Kaevol.
She crouched over one of the glowing bags and reached inside.
How did you get it in bottles?
We melted it with a toxic potion. It returned to a solid state later.
It looks like much of the Akaril lost its ability to absorb bastial energy.
Keel took out a bottle with a silver metal lining its base. She turned the bottle upright, and the metal leaned against the other side of the bottle.
It didn't, Ezel assured her. The glass of those bottles just didn't crack enough during our trip to let bastial energy in.
Interesting.
Keel looked through the rest of the bag, taking out cracked and whole bottles for investigation.
What are you doing with all of this Akaril?
Getting it to a group called the Wind Knights, Ezel explained. They should be able to keep it safe as we figure out how to use the Akaril to build a device that can cause explosions. We'll use the threat of this power to stop the war.
Her eyes widened as she looked at the bags again.
You had these near King Carolto?
No, Kernich said. We made sure to keep them behind when we headed to the Citadel and did not mention them. But withholding the truth is what got me and Beatrix thrown into prison. Your king was going to rape her. Does this surprise you?
No, don't call him my king. I'm glad he's dead.
We have to decide where to go,
Beatrix interrupted. Where will the Wind Knights be now, Kernich?
They have no choice but to fight for Kiro. Adria's probably with them, but I don't know where exactly. They could still be sieging Tenred, which would mean getting to Corrin Forest would be best. But if the war has shifted, if the war has been taken down, then they could be garrisoned past it. Or they could have been pushed back to the Fjallion Mountains. If things have gone very bad, however, they could be all the way back at the Academy. Or the war could even be over. It's doubtful, though. It's been less than a week since we left.
So it seems to me that the Wind Knight's most likely on the Fjallion Mountains or somewhere nearby, Beatrix said. We should be able to spot the army from the mountains. That means Kaevol would be the best place to go. Ezel can climb up the mountains and figure out where the Wind Knights are.
But without being seen?
Kernich asked dubiously.
The mountains are mostly flat up top. If your brother's army is up there, then I don't see how Ezel is supposed to get to a Wind Knight without being noticed. Now that I think of it, that will be an issue no matter where we find your brother's army.
I can go at night, Ezel said. I'll climb the mountain while the two of you keep the Akaril safe. Depending on where the Wind Knights are, we will develop a plan to hand off the Akaril to them.
He felt butterflies in his stomach as he realized how close they were to getting rid of the responsibility for this Akaril.
Then it's settled. We'll go to Kaevol,
Beatrix decided. Ezel would love to see his mother in their tavern, but the risk was too great. Alifon probably had people watching the place. In fact, Alifon probably had people watching most places Ezel and the others would want to visit in Kiro, the Academy as well.
We shall plan to arrive by sundown, Kernich said. Keel, where in Kaevol can you make a portal?
Near the lake, on the Fjallion Mountains side.
The northern side, good.
Ovira is east of here, Ezel noted. It will be later there than it is here, but I don't know by how many hours.
It's probably night already, Kernich said. We could leave now.
Then let's do that.
Keel had just uncorked a cracked bottle when she glanced over at the three of them waiting for her.
Let me practice a few times at least.
Harry,
Beatrix told her, then turned to address Kernich.
There's an issue. None of us has had anything to eat, and Ezel hasn't slept in a full day like we have. We need a place to rest in Kaevol.
What about here? Anna said. We don't have much food, but you can stay and leave tomorrow.
If they killed the king, they are criminals,
Keel said as she took a wand from her pocket. It's best they leave as soon as possible.
And we would hate to take what little food you have, Beatrix added.
There is one place we should be able to go in Kavel, where the Ackerel won't be at risk of being stolen.
Dazzle, why am I the one suggesting going to your mother's tavern? I figured you would by now.
There was a pang in his chest.
Of course I want to, but it's too risky. Your brother probably has men watching the place. So we'll go in at night. Where else are we going to sleep and eat if we have 6 bags of Ackerel with us?
I figured we would hide it in the mountains.
And then what? Beatrix asked. The only place we can purchase food in Kavel is your mother's tavern. Otherwise we'd have to walk miles to get to the capital, where any number of city guards or troops loyal to my brother could see us. We couldn't make it there before daybreak, and we especially couldn't wait at an inn a whole day and then return to Kavel the next night. It's a risk to go to your mother's tavern, but it's the lowest risk of our options if we're going to eat.
Keel opened a black portal no bigger than her hand.
Ah, she grumbled, my mind isn't quite there yet.
Dazzle looked to Kernich.
I can't argue against seeing my mother.
Kernich shrugged.
And I can't argue with Beatrix's logic.
Dazzle's hunger returned as he realized how soon he would be home. The visit would be too short, but it was far better than no visit at all. Keel practiced a few more times, pulling bastial energy out of glowing Ackerel in the cracked bottles. After 4 attempts, she said,
I feel the connection strongly enough. This should work. We are ready,
Beatrix answered for them. But Keel looked down at the open bags.
I don't think you are.
I've heard that the Academy headmaster can keep a portal open for a few minutes, but I'm lucky when mine lasts more than a few seconds.
Collect the bags and stand close.
They took her advice.
Thank you, Beatrix said. I'm not sure if we would have made it back to Kiro without you. I'm happy to help anyone who has a chance at stopping war. Now let me focus.
Keel cleared her throat and furrowed her brow. She snapped her wrist and a portal opened in front of her shaky wand.
Kernich, you first, Dazzle said. Have to make sure you can fit.
The portal was about half the size Dazzle was used to jumping through. It hovered high, its base at his knees and its top at his head. Kernich groaned from the strain as he lifted the 2 bags of Ackerel in front of his chest and jumped into the portal with one on his back. It didn't look as if he'd gotten his legs high enough, his boots remaining below the portal. But as soon as he entered, they were sucked up into it. There was a gruesome bend of his shins. Hopefully it was only the way the portal twisted images. Beatrix seemed paralyzed by fear at what they'd seen, so Dazzle said,
I'll go next.
It was difficult to jump high with an Ackerel bag in his arms and another on his back, but he tried his best. He felt his feet stretching painfully as he leapt into the portal, but the sensation was gone as he tumbled out through the other side. He rolled as vertigo attacked him. The glass bottles in his bags cracked against each other with a deafening sound. There were spinning shades of black and grey combining with one another before they expanded and swirled apart to make the familiar shapes of Dazzle's hometown. The portal had spit him out on one side of the enormous lake near the mountains, with Kavel on the other side of the water. There was a good chance no one would hear the portal. Dazzle checked to make sure his feet were still attached, as Beatrix came tumbling through after him. His limbs seemed to be in order. He could still move them, and there was minimal pain. He looked over at Kernich, rising and shifting his weight back and forth as if to test his own feet.
That did not feel right,
the warrior said as he lifted a leg and turned his ankle. He grimaced.
Can you walk?
Dazzle asked.
Yes. You good to climb?
I will be after I see my mother.
Kernich nodded.
You must be looking forward to that. Even I look forward to seeing my mother when this is over, and she isn't as nice as yours.
Beatrix took in a loud breath as she looked down. It reminded Dazzle that she had recently lost her father, more recently than he had, and she didn't have a mother to return to like he and Kernich did.
How come you didn't ask Anna if she knew anything about your other siblings?
Dazzle wondered as they collected the bags of Ackerel.
Didn't your brother tell you they were in Greenedge?
Before he let Jimin torture me, yes, he did tell me that,
Beatrix replied.
I didn't care to ask Anna about my siblings, because they wouldn't do anything to help us if we found them. My older sister and younger brother are cowards. They've always done what's easiest, like running.
Beatrix carried the bag of Ackerel toward the sloping leg of rock of the Fialion Mountains in front of them.
Let's hide them here.
We have to leave your tavern before sunrise, and I have little idea of how long that will be from now.
Dazzle looked at the night sky. It was clear, speckled by bright stars. Beatrix and Kernich helped him pull out the softened stone and store the ackerel bags in the small holes they created. If anyone came close, they would